Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the ISF final Pride Month podcast. We're very, very happy to be here, and with me is my co-host, Rachel. Say hello, Rachel.
Hello, Rachel.
And our special guest and compatriot here, Sydney, is with us. Say hello, Sydney.
Hello, everyone.
And we're very, very happy to be here. Now, last week we had a slight mishap, and that was all my fault. We weren't as prepared, but this particular podcast, what we're going to do is we're going to go through films from like 1975 on. I'm going to basically take the first part of it, which is up to 2000. Sydney, if there's any movies that I mentioned or any movies in that time frame you want to mention that I don't, please do. And if you have any comments, just let me know. All right?
Okay.
So we ended up last week talking about the Rocky Horror Picture Show. So Sydney, I'm going to take it to you very quickly. Do you have anything to add as far as your comments, your thoughts on Rocky Horror Picture Show?
Rocky Horror Picture Show is actually one of the very first LGBT movies I ever watched.
Me too. Yay.
And it was so funny because it was mother showed it to me and I was like 8. I didn't really understand everything about it, but it was like this weird innate feeling in the back of my head. I'm like, oh, these are my people.
Exactly.
And
oh,
I
my
think
God.
As a kid, I didn't really fully understand what that meant. I think I probably understood it as like, oh, it's like it's a musical, so it's theater people. Like, because I was always a theater kid. But like later on, I realized it's more than just theater people I was relating to.
Exactly, and that is the same feeling I had on Rocky Horror. That was my introduction into LGBTQ stuff, and mm-hmm. I was also, like, between the years of 6 and 8 years old when I saw it for the first time, and it was a musical, which I loved, and it had a really pretty costuming and makeup, which I loved.
And it started my lifelong love of Tim Curry, because Clue is another movie I saw around the same time, and I'm obsessed with both.
Yeah. For me, it was Richard O'Brien, but that's okay. I always wanted to be Riff Raff.
Oh, God, Riff Raff. Didn't he write the musical as well?
Yes, absolutely.
He did not just write the musical.
When he created the whole shebang. From what I gather.
Yes. His name is Richard O'Brien, and he actually did the musical. He was part of the anarchist punk movement in the early 70s in England.
Mm-hmm.
And Rocky Horror was actually written by him as an exploration, because he was not sure at that point in his life whether he was a man or a woman.
Isn't that a very similar story to, and it's another one of my favorite movies as well, because it was turned into a movie, but Hedwig and the Angry Inch?
Yes! That is one of the ones we're going to talk about later tonight. That's kind of
those
the
are
thing.
My...
is.
Those are both very near and dear to my heart.
And mine as well. Rocky Horror more so than Hedwig, but I
agree.
Kind of the same thing. It's like coming into yourself and recognizing who you want to be and who you are. And that's part of why both of those movies are so amazing for the LGBTQ movement.
Mm-hmm.
But I think
okay.
that we probably need to talk to Carl, and he can tell us about how it all started.
Exactly.
Well, what we're going to do here is as far as Rocky Horror, I was already in college at the time. I had had some other films and that had a major impact on me before that. But I will say this. I told Rachel this, so I won't say, Rachel, you can't answer this. But Sydney,
I'm not going to.
I dressed up as a character in Rocky Horror. Do you want to guess who
I
was?
Oh, I guessed it. I did.
Guess. Let me see. You dressed up as a character.
From Rocky.
No, my gut is probably going to want to say Riff Raff, but I don't think so.
Okay. I would say
I'm going to go with Magenta.
No. No, let's
no?
put it this way. No. No. Let's put it this way. Since I had a slight case of CP in that, I had contacts at the hospital. Now can you guess?
Oh, were you the professor?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, because I'm trying to convince my guy to go to the midnight showing here in Tucson because he's never been, and neither have I, actually. It's like which is so bizarre because I love the movie. But we want to dress up, and
go.
I was thinking of doing
go.
The professor.
Yeah, well, that would be perfect for you. And I had a friend of mine. I was in the community theater there called Seneca Highlands. And I had a friend of mine who dressed me up all in high heels and fishnets so that when I made the reveal, it was there. And I had a nice... it was wonderful. I had a great time. So anyway, we're going to move on from here because we got a lot of coverage to make here. So 1975, there was
a lot of shit to talk about.
Yeah, we do. So in 1975, there was another major LGBT film directed by Sidney Lumet about a bank robbery. Bank robbery was made by two people, and the reason was that the one that did it was planning to take the money so that his lover could have a sex change operation. Do you know what movie I'm talking about?
Wait. His lover could have a sex change. Oh, my God. I'm blanking on the name, but I guarantee you once you say it, I'm going to be like, that's it, because I've seen it. The plot sounds so familiar.
It's called
yes,
Dog Day Afternoon.
You've actually... Dog Day Afternoon.
Mm-hmm. And the funny thing about it is my Richard, who I had the affair with, the relationship, he knew these people. And actually, there is a documentary on this person, and Richard is in it, which is rather interesting to say the least. So that is Dog Day Afternoon. Now moving on, in 1977, there was a film that I loved. It ran on HBO, a Canadian film, and it's about a drag queen, and it's called Outrageous. And it was very famous at the time. And it's a wonderful, wonderful film. And it's about this transgender who is, you know, having, you know, questions and so on and so forth. And this woman moves in with him as a roommate. And the relationship blossoms and he doesn't understand what's happening. But it's a very interesting film. And all I have to say is, one of our favorite people in the world worked on Outrageous 2. And you know who that is, Rachel?
I am going to feel really remiss when I tell you no.
Sam
I can't
Irvin.
Remember.
Sam Irvin.
Ah, I do love me some Sam. He's
Yes. Okay, so, and that's a film that I do recommend. I saw that and I just loved it. I've had a great fascination with the transgender, and particularly with drag queens. And you have to realize that when I was growing up very, very young, I mean, people like Milton Berle would always be in drag, and so many people, it was very much a comic thing, and I just always thought it would be funny and humorous, but a movie like that showed me the humanity, which I had not seen before. In 1978, we move on to the original Birdcage, La Cage aux Folles, which is definitely a very, very iconic LGBT film, but not one of my favorites. And then in 1980, we come across two films, very controversial, not exactly the best representation for LGBTQ. And I actually watched this first one to consider whether or not to do a watch of it during the month. And about 20 minutes into it, I'm saying, no fucking way. And I'm going to ask the two of you, have you ever seen Cruising?
No, I have not.
Sydney, have you ever seen Cruising by William Friedkin? Oh, wait a second. Hold on.
I don't.
Hi, Sydney.
Hello. Sorry, got raptured and I had to come back.
Okay, well, that's cool. So have you ever seen the movie Cruising?
No, I have not.
Okay, well, it was very controversial at the time. The film itself is actually quite, you know, it's basically very neutral. It doesn't judge one way or t'other. But because it's focusing on the leather end of the spectrum for the LGBT community, most of the LGBT community did not consider it a positive portrayal. And I can understand that. I watched 20 minutes of it just to see whether or not we should do a watch, and I'm going, nah, that's a little too uncomfortable for me. So no, but it is an important film, and it's one I do recommend to watch, but you'll have to have a little bit of backbone for it. And we have another film by Brian De Palma, which is the perfect representation of how the LGBTQ community was demonized. And that was Dressed to Kill. And it all ends up that Michael Caine is a transvestite murderer. Lovely. Lovely. Just the best thing for the LGBTQ community. Oh, well. No comments on that particular film? Have either of you seen that?
Mm-mm. I'm kind of, I don't want to say newbie to moderate, but like I've not seen a tonnage of LGBT films, but I've seen a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, for me, this was my era. So you know, that's why we're going through it rather quickly. 1981 was a banner year for LGBTQ representation, and I do mean a banner. There are eight films I'm going to mention from 1981. The first one was going to be a commentary watch, but then we decided to do Best in Show instead, and that would be Come Back to the Five and Dime, Jimmy Dean, Jimmy Dean, which is based on a play by Ed Grassick, which I happened to see on Broadway because a friend of mine was able to get me tickets, and it was directed by Robert Altman on Broadway. He then took that play and transferred it to the screen with an absolutely fantastic cast, including Cher, Sandy Dennis, Karen Black, Sudie Bond, oh, I can't think of her name right now, but Misery, Kathy Bates is in it also. One of my favorite lesser-known actresses, Marta Heflin, is also in it. And it's about a reunion of a fan club 20 years later in 1975 from when they were filming Giant. And let's just say that one of the characters that were the original then had a sex change operation, shows up at the reunion as a woman. And that would be the part that Karen Black plays, and she's absolutely fantastic in it. And it is a wonderful representation of her particularly. But it is very, very much, you know, they're going out at each other being quite catty and things like that. So it's sort of like the female version of Boys in the Band to a certain degree. In 1981 also, when Making Love, which was really the first of the gay films that were positive. Yes,
yeah.
The one person ends up dying at the end like Bob Story, but yet it is a very, very good representation, and that starred Harry Hamlin. Then we have one of the worst, probably an absolutely awful film called Partners, where Ryan O'Neal is a homophobic cop who is partnered with John Hurt, who is gay. And it is so bad in terms of stereotypes and that. Yet even with that case, John Hurt, you wish the movie was about him and fuck Ryan O'Neal and just get him off screen and let's talk about John Hurt. Then in 81, by the way, if either of you have seen these movies, just pipe on in, okay? We also have Personal Best. Go ahead.
I was going to pipe in, but earlier my
phone was
okay.
No, go ahead. Pipe
directly. We're the moment has passed, as it were. I want you to keep going though, because I'm like learning a whole bunch of shit right now.
Okay, then we have Personal Best, which is a lesbian love story of two athletes, with Mariska Hargitay. And a wonderful, wonderful film. Lovely film. Then I bet you both of you have seen this one. Victor Victoria. Have you seen this movie?
Yes.
Absolutely. I've seen live.
Okay, so talk to me, guys.
Oh, my God. So that one is one of the ones that I feel like is super full of wrong gay people tropisms and all that. But I also love it. The story is wonderful.
You know, that was one of those movies that I was actually shown in my high school drama class. And I kind of feel like a lot of the LGBT movies, at least I'm very familiar with, are plays or musicals that got turned into movies. Because I feel like there was a whole lot of more LGBT representation on the stage before it made it to the movies. I may be wrong, but I just feel like there's a glut of that.
I kind of feel the same way because I told people on the last show that we did about this, about the films, that I am painfully remiss in having watched, you know, LGBTQ films, but that's because I'm more of the television show person. So I could talk to you about TV shows about it all day, but the films, not as much. I mean, I have a number of them, one of which is Victor Victoria, or, you know, the Ed Wood version that we talked about last week, Glenn or Glenda. yeah, I want to see better representation, and that's why I don't watch a lot of the movies that I've seen on the playlists for, you know, best gay movies of all time, blah.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, no, just because they have gay people in them doesn't mean it's a good representation of our community.
Yes, a gay person
very
existing
true.
Doesn't mean that it's a quality reference.
Exactly.
But
the
for
same
me,
thing can be said,
it's going
the
to...
same thing can be said for disabled people as well. Like, just because it's on the list somewhere doesn't mean you're doing it right.
Exactly.
That's true. That's very true. For me, Victor and Victoria is just your basic farce, where Julie Andrews dresses up as a man, James Garner, you know, is attracted and doesn't know whether or not he's gay or not. It's a farce. And when you do farces, generally it all comes out well at the end, and everything is fine and everybody's fine and nobody's gay and that sort of thing. And yet they're the Robert Preston character in there is really good.
Well, it's kind
mm-hmm.
of like my favorite movie that we're actually going to be doing a commentary watch on this weekend on Saturday, Stranger Than Fiction. Long story short, dude's having some crazy ideas about what's going on in his brain. He talks to a literature expert about the narrator in his brain. And then at one point in the movie, looks at the woman who is obviously going to be his love interest and says, I think I'm living in a tragedy. Because it was explained to him earlier in the movie that you have to figure out if you're living in a comedy or a tragedy. In a comedy, everything gets fucked up, but everybody gets married in the end. And in a tragedy, everybody dies. But they're the same story. It just depends on the ending, whether or not it's going to be a comedy or a tragedy. So when he looks at the woman and says, I believe I'm living in a tragedy, you kind of get it. Like, everything is understandably funny and weird and avant-garde or whatever, but, yeah. And I think that's kind of, yeah.
So we're going to move on here because we got another big one from 81, which was one that really had an impact on me. And it's all because of one particular character that was portrayed by John Lithgow in his film debut, mind you. And that would be The World According to Garp. Have either of you seen this?
No.
No. I think I've seen parts of it. I haven't seen the whole thing.
Okay. And you don't know the novel?
No.
By John Irving.
I didn't even know there was a novel, so.
Yeah. So The World According to Garp is about Jenny Fields, who becomes the first real feminist, and one of the things she wants to do is basically take men and have their balls cut off. Her son is Garp, who is played by Robin Williams, and her second in command is a transgender character that is played by John Lithgow. And I'm going to say this right now. She is the best character in the film. And it is the best representation of a transgender, even better than Terrence Stamp in Priscilla. That's how good this representation is. And
oh, wow.
We have,
that's high praise coming from you.
Oh, absolutely.
That is.
Absolutely. John Lithgow is just magnificent in this role. And the role is really written well. The
no,
character
no,
is
no. John Lithgow is just magnificent. There you go. Fixed it for you.
I agree. Third Rock from the Sun was still one of my all-time favorite sitcoms, even though it doesn't really hold up anymore. I'll still watch the crap out of it.
Oh, yeah.
Well, for
I just benched it like 2 years ago, and it was still amazing.
For me, John Lithgow will always be Dr. Emilio Lizardo, but that's a whole different story. We'll get into that later. But he is magnificent in this film. And as I said, the representation, the character herself, is the most humane character in the whole movie. And it is a fantastic film. Your mileage may vary because it is a long film and there are segments of it that are really rough. But it's a really, really good film, and I recommend it highly. And all those films that I talked about, from Come Back to the Five and Dime to this one, World According to Garp, it's all 1981. So that is a major, major year for representation. We're going to move on now to 1983. And we got three films, of which one I'm sure you've seen. So I'll leave that one for the end. The first one is one that
okay.
I saw in New York in the theater. It is a Dutch film directed by Paul Verhoeven way before he came to the U.S. and did Total Recall and RoboCop and all that. It's called The Fourth Man, and it's about this man that gets involved with Renee Suchovic, and he is a femme fatale, but he's gay. So her wiles don't exactly work on him, at least immediately. And there's a lot of cross-dressing. There's a lot of different things, and murders, and so on and so forth. It's an interesting film, and it's played as a black comedy. And I do recommend it highly if you've not seen it. So that is one. Another one that I like even better is Nagisa Oshima's film, Merry Christmas, Mr. Lawrence. Oshima had done a film, In the Realm of the Senses, which was the first art film that was had hardcore sex in it. And that was done in 1976. This is 1983. And this is a love story between a British prisoner of war and his Japanese commandant. And it stars David Bowie and Tom Conti and Ryushi Sakamoto, who also wrote the score to it. It is a fabulous film, and I recommend it highly. Now, have either of you seen or heard of those two films before?
Nope.
Mm-mm.
Not at all.
I feel bad. I'm like striking out so much.
I am too right
that's...
now, and that's the thing is I will say it again. I have not watched as much LGBTQ film as I have listened to music and watched television shows.
The other thing too is I'm in my 60s. You guys are in your 30s and 40s. I'm a generation behind you. So
oh, no,
I'm,
we're
this
both
is,
in our 30s. We're the
same. I'm going to say, do not make me 40 yet. I'm not ready.
Okay.
I'm not ready for that
either. You're a generation and a half behind me. So these films will not be ones that you're familiar with. These are films I grew up with. You know, I'm your age or younger and seeing these films for the first time. In 1981, I was 23 years old. Okay.
I was born in 85, so yeah.
So the next thing is, I'm sure you've seen this movie, and that would be Tony Scott's mm-hmm. The Hunger.
Yes.
I have
seen that. Vampire movie of all time.
But it's not, wait, did you say vampire movie?
Yeah,
no.
It's the one with David Bowie as the vampire in the
80s. Oh,
and the beginning
yes.
scene is Bela Lugosi's Dead by Bauhaus.
Oh, yeah, I've been calling it something different this whole time.
No, it's The Hunger.
So yes, I've seen it.
Probably many
times. Yeah, and that's
times.
Catherine Deneuve and Susan Sarandon, who become lovers.
Yeah.
So it, to me, it's not that successful. You know, when Bowie's around, it's a good movie. Once Bowie leaves halfway through, it doesn't hold together for me.
I feel the same way. I also rented that on VHS back in the day when we actually had DVD players. I had to rent it on VHS, and it was in one of those giant plushy VHS covers, not the ones from like Disney movies, but the ones that were like cardboard from the 70s that were huge.
Right.
Yeah. I had to rent that movie in that format to watch it for the first time when I was a teenager, and I loved it. Yeah. The Hunger is always going to be one of my favorites. That might have something to do with the fact that Bauhaus was in it, but whatever.
Right. So
yeah, I agree.
So we're going to move on to 1985. And at this point, I'm working for a woman by the name of Carla Pinza at Latino Playwrights. And I was an administrative assistant. And she had a lot of friends who were actors and that sort of thing. She was well-known in the community. So I got a chance to meet Raul Julia on several occasions. Not only that, I was basically in contact with his administrative assistant at least once a week, once every couple of weeks. But what happened was I was able to get a ticket to Broadway to see this Broadway play that he was in. And was called Kiss of the Spider Woman. And they made a film of it, and it came out in 1985. And Raul Julia plays this political prisoner in South America. I think it was Chile. I think it was Allende. I'm not positive of that. And William Hurt. And Raul Julia is imprisoned because he's gay. And he tells the story of the Spider Woman to William Hurt to pass the time. And it is a very, very fine film. And tears your heart out. I mean, this is not a happy film by any means. But it's all about having dignity. And Raul Julia is absolutely fantastic in it, as is William Hurt.
I mean, is Raul Julia not like one of the most dignified people you've ever seen on screen? I mean, he was the guy that played Papa Adams and all that shit.
I was going to say, Adams Family, like, that's just iconic.
Oh, absolutely. But I had numerous occasions to meet him. And he was a wonderful person. Wonderful person. So that's another one you should check out. Then we go to 1987, and we talk about two films. One is the Merchant Ivory film, Maurice, which is not D.H. Lawrence, I forget who wrote the original novel, but it's about a gay relationship during Victorian England, and it was one of Hugh Grant's first roles. I know
what you're talking about. I can't remember the name, though.
The film is called Maurice, and so is the novel. I just don't remember who wrote it. but yes, you should definitely watch that. But the one I want to talk about, 1987, okay?
It's E.M. Forster.
Okay, thank you. You are wonderful, Miss Sydney.
I read it in high school. I was just, you know, boggling my mind.
Very good. So I have a question for the two of you. Have you ever heard the name of the author, Joe Orton?
Yes.
I don't think so, no.
Okay, where have you heard it?
You.
I heard it, yes. Oh, from me. Okay, well, that doesn't count. Joe Orton was a playwright, okay? And he was gay. He was murdered, actually, by his gay lover, unfortunately. But he wrote these really caustic plays, particularly The Entertaining Mr. Sloan, which was made into a film, Loot, which is another one. But this is a film by Stephen Frears, and it's a biopic of Joe Orton called Prick Up Your Ears.
Yes, with Gary. Is it with Gary Oldman and Alfred Molina?
Yes. Yep.
Oh, that is one of my all-time favorite movies. Again, it's
okay,
a play.
Talk to me. Yeah, what's... So talk to
and
me.
It's about a play. It's about a playwright, and I remember watching because I love Gary Oldman and Alfred Molina. Like really, they can like put them in anything, and I'll watch. But
put
it's just
them
like,
in a two-hour
ending.
Movie of reading the phone book, and it's going to be amazing.
Exactly, but like I just remember when I saw that movie without. If I don't know, have you seen it, Rachel? Because I don't want to spoil it if you haven't.
I have not, but go ahead and spoil it because I'm going to forget it in like 2 seconds anyway.
Oh no, this is an ending you don't forget, but it's just very heartbreaking ending and it's brutal, but it's also like, I want to describe it as like it's a love story murder. Like that's kind of what it is.
It's the story of a murder for love.
Yeah, it really, really is.
Okay. Well, I can totally watch that.
It's the best, and they have great chemistry together. Like, they're actually a pair of straight actors that are a very believable gay couple.
And that's one of the things that that's why a lot of the movies we're bringing up right now and some of the ones we're going to bring up here later in the show are not necessarily the ones you find on the, 200 best LGBTQ movies ever.
Mm-hmm.
Because the thing that makes it a good queer-centric movie for me is when there's gay characters and it's not a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
Right? We've talked about this before and I want to normalize things like this for people like me and you guys and my kid who, by the way, I have to give a birthday shout out to. I have a lovely 12-year-old kid right now. Oh, my God. Happy birthday, Ree.
Okay, hold on. Carl has to do this. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, Rhiannon. Happy birthday to you and many more. There you go.
Yep.
And the best birthday gift. The best birthday gift I can give is to not sing. So.
Me too. Actually, I promised not to sing to my kid, but I did drop them off cupcakes at their aunt's house today. So, but it's really important for me personally to see the normalization of LGBTQ media. I watch more television shows than I do movies because I'm a stay-at-home mom and I have a whole lot of time on my hands. So I'm more into shows than I am into movies. But either way, when I see it in movies and shows and especially movies, honestly, it's really, really rewarding to me. I mean, to use the word again, especially when my kid is like, hey, Mama, do you see that those people, like, are doing the LGBTQ thing? Like, that's awesome. And I'm like, yeah, it is. And I want it to be more normalized than I want it to be the point of something. Like, I don't want it to be the whole basis of the character. I don't want the storyline to be based on, you know, the fact that they're gay or don't feel like they were born of the right gender, because that's something that's been happening, I mean, since humans have happened.
Well, it would also be nice to see movies where it's not always gay inspiration porn.
Yeah.
Yes.
That too.
And Carl and I have talked about that. Like, there's this whole big movement of, like, gay-spiration.
Or
yeah,
you know,
well,
hold
on. That's actually called The Magic Negro, when it was about black relations. But you can say the magic gay. You can say the magic cripple person. You can say whatever you want. But that type of representation is absolutely reprehensible to me.
Well,
it's
I was going to say there's also, like, there's the white savior complex. There's also the straight savior complex as well. Like, look at me, how great I am being a friend to this outcast gay person.
Yeah.
Right. Like, actually, one of the movies that I want to talk about later, you may be more familiar with it, Sydney, than Carl is, but we need to talk about Saved in a little bit.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Well, let me put it this way, guys. If I don't keep going here, you're not going to have time.
I know, and that's why I said you need to keep going.
Yeah. Okay. So we're going to keep going here. So in 1989... we have the definitive AIDS movie called Long Time Companion. And let's just leave it at that. Not exactly a movie I want to revisit.
I don't want to revisit that movie. I just want everybody to know that you should watch it at least once in your life. But kind of like the boy with the striped pajamas, never again.
I agree.
Okay.
It's important for you to understand what happened and what was happening during that time, which it is slightly different now, but no.
And don't forget, kids, I lived through that. I was in New York in the 80s. I worked at Carl Fisher, and I went to at least 20 funerals, of which I was pallbearer of 3 of people that died of AIDS. Okay, so yeah, it's not something, it's something you should watch to understand what happened, but yeah, I'm not going to watch it again. So we're going to move on here. 1990. We have two films. One is a wonderful film about transsexuals called drag queens called Paris is Burning, which is particularly sort of like a documentary. But the movie I really want to talk about in 1990, which no one really considers that the LGBTQ, unless you really know the movie and a little bit of the plot, it is my favorite gangster movie of all time. And it's called Miller's Crossing. And it's by the Coen brothers. Now, have either of you seen Miller's Crossing? with Gabriel Byrne and
no, but now I want
no, you
to
haven't?
The way you described it.
Okay, so it's basically the story of Gabriel Byrne, and it's not Anthony Hopkins, who is it? Albert Finney. Albert Finney is the boss, and you have a wonderful John Polito, who is the alternate, the Italian crime boss that starts out the whole movie. What we're talking about here is ethics. You know, it's the Coen brothers writing at their best, and it's basically a movie about hats. You have to see the movie to understand what I'm talking about. But there is this relationship that is crucial to the film, and it is a gay relationship between Steve Buscemi, who plays Mink. Okay, and he's this little weasel guy, you know, this little weasel guy, and what they call, well, what do they call him? But basically, it's John Polito's bodyguard, who's 6'4" and huge, and that, and they have a relationship. So the interesting thing about that is that it's part of the plot, but it's accepted. Right? And yet you're seeing a relationship that is definitely not stereotypical. And even though it is a minor plot point in the whole thing, and it's one of those films that is really, really complicated, right? Nonetheless, it's beautiful. And you need to see it. And it's one of those things that we were talking about. It's part of the plot, but it's not really emphasized. It's not, you know, it's just there, and it's accepted to be there. So I think that's the wonderful thing about it.
And that is what I need in my life. Actually, let me see what year this movie came out. No, you have a couple more you're going to talk about, don't you, Carl?
Oh, I have a bunch more. But that was 1990. Okay, it came out. It's called Miller's Crossing. Recommended highly. Probably, certainly in my top 20 films. Certainly in my top 20.
I have heard about that one before.
In 1991, we have a very famous LGBTQ movie, which I personally do not like it all, but I will recommend it simply because it needs to be recommended. It's a good film, but I just don't like how the way it's handled and what happens in it. And that's My Own Private Idaho. It's one of those that just makes you like want to take a shower afterwards. Okay.
And see, I haven't seen that movie, but I already want to shower because to me, Idaho means potatoes and dirty. So I'm good.
So what's wrong, Rachel? Idaho. Okay, bad pun.
Beautiful. Beautiful. I don't know.
So we're going to keep going here. In 1992, Neil Jordan came out with one of the most incredible reveals ever in a film. And that would be the gangster film, The Crying Game, with Stephen Ray and John Lone.
Oh, and, Jesus.
What? Talk to me.
I know the reveal in that movie. That's an oh Jesus moment, especially because back in the time that was the reveal, that was like a really big deal. So much so that they later made fun of it in the Ace Ventura movies.
Right, exactly.
And that is the kind of stuff that we're trying to avoid, because The Crying Game, beautiful fucking movie, beautiful fucking story. But that big reveal specifically made a lot of derogatory humor later in the year. And it makes me so sad because that is exactly what we're trying to talk against right now.
You want to avoid that.
Yes,
no,
yes.
But,
and it was necessary that we bring up that movie so that we can say things like, hey, that's not how we feel about shit. That's not how people should feel about shit. I like it more when people just, you know, pretend like it's normal because it kind of fucking is.
This is true. It's a great film, and I recommend it highly.
It is.
And John Lone also plays into the next year, into a film we're going to talk about. Well, we're going to talk about two films in 1993, and I'm going to talk about this first film and saying that I absolutely hate it, and I do. I despise this movie because it's an age movie without ever mentioning AIDS. And that would be Tom Hanks, Philadelphia.
Oh, God, yes.
I
don't
hate
actually
that
know
movie.
Tell me about it.
Basically, Tom Hanks plays a lawyer who gets AIDS. Who is it Denzel Washington, I guess?
Yes,
I'm
it is Denzel
mistaken.
Washington.
You know, is his lawyer as he sues his employer for letting him go. But the
well,
point
that
being,
movie was also that movie was also almost a little bit like a twofer for the time because they gave Denzel this magical savior quality about him too.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's another point about this film. But what really got me about this film is, it's an AIDS film who doesn't even have the audacity to say it's an AIDS film.
Oh, my
okay,
God.
So,
did anybody see the recent Freddie Mercury biopic? What was it called?
Bohemian
oh,
Rhapsody.
God, I
where
hate that,
they,
too.
He was
hey,
bi.
Where,
he was bi. That pissed me off that they just made him gay.
No, they just made him gay, but they also didn't deal with the AIDS Ooh. Issue.
Well, they also
right.
never said the words gay either. Like, it was done in a way where it was like, it felt shameful, the whole movie. Like, I liked many elements of that movie, but the way they dealt with his sexuality as a whole was just, like,
Thank
that,
you.
Like, it upset
me. By the way, talking about that film, I want to just give a shout out that to a much better film. That's a biopic of Elton John, and that's Rocket Man. And they don't shy
I've
away
been,
from that shit.
I have been told that it is a very, very good movie.
It
it's
is.
On my
it
list.
Actually
I just keep
is.
Missing it.
And I hate Elton John.
Right. And
so,
personally, I'm
Rocket
not a Queen
Man's
fan
good.
Anyway. I've never cared for Queen, so there you go. But we need to talk about another film in 1993. And John Lone, who starred in The Crying Game, also starred in this one. And would you believe that David Cronenberg has an LGBTQ film? Did you know that?
I did not.
How about you, Sydney?
I mean,
did you know that?
Mm-mm.
It's based on a play. And it's called M. Butterfly. Of course, Madame Butterfly. And it's based on
Madame
a real
play. It's not a play.
But it's based on
it's an opera.
Right. But no, this is based on a play. This is a play. This is not the opera. Okay, so the story is an English attaché goes to China. He's played by Jeremy Irons. and falls in love with this courtesan, who is actually a male and played by John Lone. Now, of course, if you know Chinese theater, particularly at this time, which was during the Victorian era, all the female parts were played by men, and he doesn't realize it. And they fall in love and have anal sex, and he doesn't realize that he's a man. And when the, of course, when the reveal happens, you would think, oh, there's going to be tragedy. Not so much. It's not exactly happy, but it's not like anyone dies or commits suicide either. It's a very film. It's a very interesting film. It is a misfire as far as I'm concerned with Cronenberg, but the more and more I've seen it, the more and more I appreciate it. Still not, for me, top tier Cronenberg, but nonetheless, a film to watch. No question. So that's 1993. We only have a couple more to go, so let me finish here. 1995. Now, you, I have mentioned many, many times during this month someone that I met who is a film historian called Vito Russo. And he wrote a book called Celluloid Closet. Well, 1995, the documentary came out. And definitely want to check that out, particularly if you have any interest at all in LGBTQ representation early. And that's something you really want to do, like in the 20s and 30s and such. Also in 1995, we have a film called Carrington, which is based starring Jonathan Pryce, who's one of my favorite actors. And he plays an author, Carrington, who actually was a real-life author and gay. And he has a relationship, a beard relationship. And it's Emma Thompson is the actress in the film. And it's a wonderful film. It's a very human film. And that's a movie I also recommend. In 1996, of course, the Wachowskis, okay? And if we take a look at their first film.
If you're about to go where I think you're about to go, I am going to be so pissed at you.
Okay. You're going to be pissed at me because you got to mention it. And that's Bound.
You're going to say The Matrix. Yeah, no.
No, I did not say The Matrix. I said Bound.
Okay. That I can go with.
The Matrix doesn't really have any LGBTQ. To be honest.
Not according to the Wachowskis, whom after they both had their gender reveals, later said that the Matrix trilogy was about their trans and LGBTQ journey.
Well, you know, they could say that all they want. It's not nearly as out there as Bound, which is about two women who have a lesbian relationship who steal money from the mob. And
that's
is much
where I'm
more
going with that is yeah, you can say many like 20 years after the fact, you can say that the movie that you made, the movie trilogy, had some things to do with your journey, but
not really.
It felt like that was kind of like, hey, we're
yeah,
jumping
you
on
have
the
to really prove it to me, and it's not anywhere there to be proven, as far as I'm concerned. Now, this is bound. I'm going to skip 97 because you're going to be talking about Greg Araki. But we're going to go to 1999. We're going to go to 1999 and a movie that I basically refuse to watch. And it's a movie I don't really want to watch. It's a movie that I have to recommend. And I know that it's a good film, but I'm still not going to watch it. And that's Boys Don't Cry. Tina Brandon. No, I'm not. No. But you have to mention
that movie.
I figured this would take an hour, and I'm right on it. So the next hour are basically you two talking about films from the late 90s on to now. So
yes,
go right ahead, baby.
I am so sorry that you recommended that film. No, do not recommend that film. Do not recommend Boys Don't Cry, ever. Hilary Swank is great in a lot of shit. And I'm pretty sure it was Hilary Swank in that one. I can't even remember right now.
It was.
But no. One of those movies where the trope is to dress up as and not be a trans person is really, really degrading.
Well, I tell you what, they did it in a film in the 70s, which I mentioned very briefly last week, called The Fox. Actually, not The Fox, Triple Echo. Yeah. Yeah, understood. But nonetheless,
it's a good movie in and of itself, but as far as the issues that we're talking about right now, like, that one hurts. And it is good that we brought it up, but that one's also one of those ones that really typifies the tropes of transitioning.
Yeah, agreed. All right, ladies, it's your turn.
Oh, shit. I mean, Carl just brought up movies from, like, you know, the 90s and 2000s, and more of the movies that I've seen in my day, although I have seen a number of the ones that Carl saw, are movies from the 2000s and on, because that's when it was more acceptable to film things like that. And there's a whole shit ton. I mean, one of my favorite movies of all time is Cecil B. Demented. And the funny thing about that movie is not that the character is gay. It's that he's in love with a man who is gay. But he is straight. And the whole thing in the movie is that he can't be with the person that he loves because he's not gay. And that is one of the best things I've ever seen in a movie in all of my days as far as representation, because A, one of the characters is blatantly gay, one of the characters is blatantly not gay, and the not gay guy, the straight guy, is the one that wants to be with the gay man, but he can't. And actually, I'm going to tell you my favorite line from the movie. I have to pull this up real quick. he's talking to the lady. He's doing her hair. The straight guy is. He's talking to her and doing her hair. And he's bleaching it super white blonde. And she says, "Ow, Rodney! Why did you have to hurt me? Gay men are supposed to be gentle." And Rodney says, "That's just it, honey. I'm not gay. I'm straight. And I fucking hate it. Petey loves me, and I can't love him back. I tried to kiss him, and it all I feel is whiskers. I can't take that certain thickness in his pants. I'm ashamed of my heterosexuality." And that is the best gay line I've ever heard in a movie ever. "I'm ashamed of my heterosexuality." And also, again, one of my favorite movies of all time. That was actually, that was 2000 that John Waters, of all people, did Cecil B. Demented. So if you're a Waters fan, you definitely need to find that one.
Oh, I will get on that immediately.
Well, the thing about John Waters, the thing about John Waters is like every damn film he ever did. I mean, you know, that's another thing we really haven't talked about is the gay directors. And you can see it in all their films, seriously.
Well, I mean, Sam Irvin, that is actually something that I've brought up when we've talked to Sam Irvin before.
Right.
That I noticed the representation in his movies, even if it was just in the background because he was directing like a Lifetime movie or something, that dude always has some representation in his shit. And I want that to be more normalized. I want people like Sam Irvin to be directing every movie. So that even if there's not, like, a gay love interest storyline, there's still maybe a picture in the background or something that happens in the background that lets you know this is supposed to be normal. Because it is.
Agreed.
So, I mean, I have, like, a shit ton more movies, Sydney and Carl, but if anybody else wants to talk about any, I mean, I've got Hedwig, but I'm a cheerleader.
Go for it. Go for it. And, Sydney, if you have any, please do, because I basically did the work up until 2000.
You did. So,
you start,
okay,
you start, and I'll jump in, because I think you and I are probably going to agree on a lot of them, and I don't have, like, anything written down, so you're probably ahead of me on that one.
I do, but only because I have to write things down, because I'm the nutty professor and forget every literal thing. So, one of the ones that we talked about earlier is Hedwig and the Angry Inch.
Oh, Hedwig.
And I know you've seen that one, so, bitch, go off.
For me, Hedwig is one of my all-time favorite movies. Besides, you know, Rocky Horror, but, like, it's weird. I've seen it forever. Like, I saw it really early on. Like, I think I was in high school when I saw it. It was on TV. It was, like, on... Remember when Bravo used to actually show movies on TV?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the first time I saw the movie Orlando with Tilda Swinton.
Yeah, oh, that's another really good movie.
God, I know.
Yeah, I didn't bring up Jarman because I actually want to do a show on Derek Jarman. I love his stuff, and I love Orlando, too, but I didn't bring that one up.
But I remember I watched it like it was like Bravo late at night because you know, mature content at the time.
Yeah.
But I watched it and I was very confused like the first time I watched it. But like I've related to different songs from that movie at different points in my life. Like, Wig in a Box was, like, the very first song I ever loved from it. It felt very musical theater to me, so I loved it.
Yeah, everybody loves that song.
But
it's amazing.
Funny story, when I was in the process of, like, coming out a few years ago, I came out when the revival was happening on Broadway with Neil Patrick Harris.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's kind of like those two things were happening at once. So now I strongly relate that musical and that movie to, like, coming out, especially, like, Origin of Love is my jam. I think that's one of the most beautifully written songs, and it's a really good premise as well. Like, it's a good story.
That is. And honestly, Hedwig is just an amazing story on its own. It's an amazing musical on its own. And you put both of the two together, and the fact that it is, like, so queer positive, it just, like, that is pretty much faultless as far as I'm concerned.
And it's one of those roles that, because of the nature of the role, it kind of can go to anybody. Like, in the revival, that opened with Neil Patrick Harris, but then eventually, I don't know if you're familiar with him, but you said you watched Glee. But Darren Criss took over for him. He's a straight guy, but he plays gay incredibly well.
Oh, which one was he in Glee?
He was Kurt's boyfriend from the Warblers.
Oh, okay. That's who I thought, because I knew it wasn't Kurt. But
he's incredibly straight in real life.
He continually
plays gay characters with Glee. He was, oh God, what's his name? The guy that killed Versace.
Ah, I can't remember, but I know. I remember when that happened.
Yeah, well, there was a show.
I was cognizant
miniseries.
When Versace was murdered, so.
So was I.
I know. You and I are the same age. We were both cognizant when Versace was murdered. We were like.
But they did like a. They did. Ryan Murphy did like a miniseries about the guy that went on the murder spree and then ended up killing Versace.
Oh
and
my
I can't
god!
His
I'm
name.
Pretty sure that's on my Hulu right now.
It's also on
anyway.
Netflix as well. But watch it because
he's.
Oh God, he is amazing in it. And. Yeah, it's so good. But yeah, when Hedwig came out, it's always like come out, I've always seen it or come across it at like weird turning points in my maturity, if you will.
I was a drama kid who was best friends with a drama kid, and so we were always looking for new musicals and shit to listen to, so I literally used to ride in the car to school listening to the Hedwig soundtrack.
Also, you mentioned musicals, and we were talking about the whole AIDS representation in movies. I need to do a quick little mini bitch about something. I hate how they got rid of Contact. That was important. And they really kind of got rid of a lot of the AIDS references as well, besides that song.
And see, I didn't know that. I've never seen Rent. I only know the one song, like, 5,000 minutes.
Well, there's a song in Rent where it's basically just about them all having sex. And the big illusion in there is that a condom breaks, but most of them are either with someone with AIDS or have AIDS themselves.
Okay.
By the way, thank you, Sydney, because if Brent was going to be mentioned, I was basically going to say, fuck that adaptation.
I love so much about the adaptation, but they neutered the AIDS part about it, which is, I feel like that's like taking Jonathan Larson and just resurrecting him and punching him in the face. Because that was
exactly
the point of the musical.
Exactly. And that's why I've never seen Rent. I've had plenty of opportunities to do so, but I will say that I am a stoic, non-Rent viewer because I know that they cut a lot of the important parts about it out. And
well, and they got a lot of the original cast in it as well. And I know on record, Taye Diggs and Jesse L. Martin, who were in it as well as in the original run of the Broadway show, they're on record saying how pissed they were that they tried to make it a family-friendly musical.
Yeah.
And that's I've had a number of people in my life that I've been close to that have passed from AIDS. I know that's weird. I'm a young person, but it sometimes takes a very long time to take you down. And so the fact that I knew that this was originally written as a musical about AIDS, and the fact that they took pretty much all mention of that out is the reason that I will not watch it.
Like, I'm surprised they even allowed them to mention the word AZT in the musical, but they also don't explain it at all. They say it, but that's it. That's all they're allowed to do.
Exactly.
And I'd be hard-pressed to find someone even our age that, unless they're nerdy, like, really know what AZT is anymore, because the drugs have changed.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. And so particular point, I mean, we've talked about Hedwig. If we want to talk about people that have diseases and that are actually weirdly enough positive LGBTQ characters, I'm going to talk to you about one that I know you've probably seen, Sydney.
Mm-hmm.
Deadpool.
I think I know where you're going.
Deadpool.
Yes.
What's the name of it again?
Oh, it's one of the best.
Deadpool? Like Wade Wilson, Deadpool?
No, wait a second.
The Merc with the Mouth?
Wait a second. What's the name of this? I missed it.
Deadpool.
Oh, Deadpool. Thank you. Deadpool.
Especially the second one.
I literally said it like four times, dude. How did you miss it?
Seriously,
one of the best examples of LGBTQ, like, we don't give a fuck, this is normal, that I've ever seen, is Deadpool.
Well, and I have to say, it's actually the second one that's even better, in my opinion. Just in general,
actually,
as a better movie. And it's even more representative.
Deadpool 2 is the one that I had listed on the list I'm going off of right now. Deadpool 2 versus the first one.
The way Wade Wilson reacts to... I'm not even going to try
Wolverine.
To do her long ass... No, the lesbian character when she gets a girlfriend.
Oh, Negasonic Teenage Warhead.
Yeah.
Yeah, that long name. He can't do it, I can't do it either. But I love how he, like, starts to say something and she's ready to attack him and he's all like, oh, well, pump the hate brakes.
Oh, no. Yeah. He hits the brakes on Negasonic Teenage Warhead, but when she comes up to him, with her girlfriend and says, this is my girlfriend. He's like, oh, hey, Kimiko. And she's like, hey, hey.
Yeah.
And that is the part that I love so much about it is, yeah, he's got, like, some major beef with NTW or whatever. But the fact that she's got a girlfriend, like, that wasn't even an issue. That wasn't even a part of the conversation. It was like, hey, chick that's dating this chick that I love. Also, I still hate your fucking face. kind of thing. And that right there, that's why I've been so excited to get to this point of the show, is when you see movies like that where the guy's like, I'm ashamed of my heterosexuality, or the guy's just randomly like, oh, 2 seconds ago I found out that you were gay, but like that doesn't bother me at all. That's what I need to see.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I want in movies.
Well, yeah, and it's weird because it's like there's also like, oh, everyone loves everyone, so accepting. What's great about Deadpool and is just his reaction about like oh, no, I'm not mad that you're a lesbian. I'm just upset that anyone dates you at all.
Yes.
Like, I still hate you. I don't care that you're gay, but I still hate you.
Right, and that's the thing, is, like, that needs to be more normal.
Yeah, it doesn't need to be a love fest 24/7. It's not supposed to be. People can still be assholes, regardless of their race, gender, sexuality, ability.
Exactly. People fucking suck no matter who they are, so let's just normalize people being who they are.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is one that I probably should have mentioned when Carl was talking earlier, but are you familiar with Priscilla, Queen of the Desert?
Yes.
I mean, that and Two Wong Fu are
Two Wong Fu is my all-time favorite. One of my favorites.
I mean, they're kind of both basically the same movie to me. It's a bunch of drag queens going on a road trip.
I love Priscilla, don't get me wrong. But to me, like, in terms of, like, movie that speaks to me, it was always Two Wong Fu because I love Patrick Swayze and John Leguizamo and Wesley Snipes. Like, they're just all amazing.
Yeah. I'm the same way. I actually recently saw Priscilla for the first time ever. And
we all saw it together.
I loved it. Yes, yes. And you were there. Like, I loved the movie. But...
Mm-hmm.
Do I like it better than Two Wong Fu? Probably
Mm-mm.
not.
Okay, you're both wrong. But you're both wrong.
I know.
Okay. You're both wrong. But that's okay. I love you anyway. Not a problem.
It's one of those, you know, stranded on a desert island, and if I could only pick one of them, I'd pick Two Wong Fu. But that's like a
Absolutely.
Gun to my head situation. I'd still watch both.
Yeah, and I would still watch both, but a gun to my head, I would also go with Two Wong Fu, but only because that one is funnier. And frankly, the dresses that they have at the end of the movie when they do the drag show are
mm-hmm.
way prettier. That's just me. Beyond that, have you seen But I'm a Cheerleader?
Yes. I know. I was so disappointed we could not watch that.
Oh, my God.
Oh,
it's one of my all-time favorites.
I love that film.
I've seen it. I've practically memorized that movie. Because I also, Natasha Lyonne is one of my major, I have this thing. I don't know if either of you do this too, But when you discover an actor I like at all, I then somehow end up going on a one-track mind binge fest of, like, everything they've ever done. Like, that's how I ended up watching Prick Up Your Ears, because I decided, I love Alfred Molina. Let me watch everything he's ever done. And so I watched that. Natasha Lyonne, I grew up on American Pie. I wanted to see what else she did. So I ended up watching But I'm a Cheerleader and Slums of Beverly Hills.
Oh, my God. Have you seen Russian Doll?
I have watched it so many times that I can't wait for the second season.
I know. I'm
okay.
Like,
I have to interrupt here, and all I have to say is this. Okay, I'm not saying that Natasha Lyonne isn't worthwhile. She certainly is. But every one of you should watch everything that Bud Cort was ever in, period. And Bud Cort, if you don't know, he plays the father. Bud Cort also was in a movie that had a real, real impact on me called Harold and Maude. But seriously, check out everything he ever did, and I'm not joking about that.
Okay.
Okay?
I trust your recommendations. You haven't led me wrong yet.
So I really don't have a whole lot left. I mean, we could talk about Monster, you know, the Charlize Theron.
That rubbed me the wrong way. Like, I know it's one of those movies where it's true. Like, it did happen. Like, Eileen Wuornos is a horrible, horrible person.
Yeah.
But I felt like they were trying to use her lesbianism as a reason why she killed all those people.
I did, too, and that is part of the reason I wrote that movie down, is because we also need to talk about examples of bad representation. And even though that movie itself was amazing and it was a very true-to-life realization of the things that Wuornos did, I do feel like the fact that she was gay was used in the movie as, like you said, an excuse.
Well,
and
they do that a lot. There's a lot of, I'm like super into true crime as well, so I've watched a glut of documentaries where if there's even a slight illusion that a possible murderer might be gay, bi, trans, anything, it's suddenly the reason why they did the murder.
Yes, exactly. And that
even
is today,
there
reason.
Was one that was done recently, like the whole staircase. They found out he was bi, so suddenly that's why he killed his wife.
Oh my God, I watched that one. Yes.
When bi had nothing to do with it, and he probably didn't kill his wife. It was an accident. But still, like, I've seen it so many times. And in fact, they wrongfully... I saw another one where they wrongfully convicted a woman in Spain for killing someone because she happened to be a lesbian and the real person that did it was a guy.
Exactly. And that is why we need more representation in things like film. Because even I and you and Carl even, like, we're all big supporters of the community.
Mm-hmm. I believe it's called Gay Panic.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. That's exactly what it is.
Because they also, the similar is when we have the satanic panic.
Where they blamed everything on Satan and gay panic.
Yeah, I was
going to
say satanic panic is
the
same thing.
Hold on. The gay panic defense is no longer applicable. Finally.
No.
You can't use that as a defense in a real-life murder.
Well,
can't do it.
Well, that's what they did with the, oh God, what are their names? They convicted like three guys because of the Satanic Panic for supposedly killing a bunch of kids.
Are you talking about the West Memphis Three?
Yes.
Don't talk to me about that.
I'm sad that pisses me off too. But the West Memphis Three and the staircase guy, it's like the same situation in my opinion. Like, oh, we found one thing that made them other. They must be a killer.
No.
I will say that my mother worked in the crime lab during the time that those guys were convicted, and we are...
Oh, you're from the area. I forgot you're from the area, so you really hate it.
Yeah, if it's okay with you guys, I'm literally calling a trigger warning. Do not bring up the West Memphis Three with me.
Done. Say no more.
I can talk to you about it on DM later, but I can't talk about it on the air.
Okay.
Legally. So, love
okay.
you guys. Yeah, we can talk about them. We can, however, talk about a movie that I just saw recently that had one of my newest favorite actors ever in it, and that would be Peter Dinklage.
Yes.
Little short dude.
I love him. Wait, are you talking about Death at a Funeral?
No, I'm talking about I Care a Lot.
Oh, yeah, but because we were still talking about LGBT stuff, because I was going to say, if you like Peter Dinklage, watch the American version of Death at a Funeral, because he plays a gay character. And it's amazing, and it's hysterically funny.
Oh, well, if you haven't seen I Care a Lot, which is on Netflix and is a brand new, like, 2000s movie...
I saw it the day it came out.
The main character is gay.
Yeah.
But you probably forgot about that because they're exactly what we're talking about. They made it so normalized that you forget.
And they made her a badass, too. Like, she's just... a badass in that movie. Like, you hate her,
I did,
but you also love her.
To be honest, I really didn't like it. The ageism in it really bothered me. The thing I did like about the film was Diane Weist, who plays the mother, who and she's really good. And Dinklage is just fucking awesome. Let's face it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so did you actually watch it to the end of the movie, Carl?
Yes.
Okay,
so
because
I feel like the ageism was kind of the point of the movie, like, because that is actually a real life problem.
I've dealt with it before, so yeah, not me personally. Like that.
Technically, that's what Britney Spears is going through right now.
Yeah, she's going through a conservatorship. That's actually how I explained it to some people in my family this week, like the Free Britney Spears movement.
And once you're stuck in it, it's the weirdest legal thing. Like you never have to be present to be put in one. And then once all your rights are taken away, it's really hard to get out of it.
Exactly. And we actually had to do that for my grandmother because she had dementia, like progressed dementia. And we had to do that after the point that she was no longer cognizant. So, yeah, that movie hit with me real specifically because I've been through the process that needed to happen, but seeing how it does and that it does happen to people who are not like my grandmother was, it really... But the whole thing is, you know, we're sitting right here right now talking about the rest of the plot of the movie and not the reason that I brought it up, which is the fact that I consider it an LGBTQ-centric friendly movie because the main character is gay AF. I mean,
yeah.
Like, one of the first things she does is go home to her wife, and they make it so normalized that you don't even think about it. When you think about that
but
movie,
also,
you think about what?
She's also the villain. She's also the villain. And that's, I really have had difficulty with that film. Even with
yeah,
the
representation. Yeah, you know who wasn't, though? Her
what?
Wife was not
no,
the
her.
Villain.
No, exactly.
I will say,
and
what I did like about their representation is, I don't know if either of you feel this way, specifically when representing lesbians. But have you noticed how when there's lesbians in a movie, one of them always has to be more, quote-unquote, butch than the other?
Oh, yeah.
They always give someone, like, a pixie cut. And they didn't do that in this movie. They're both incredibly feminine.
Right.
And both incredibly attractive and wearing gorgeous
mm-hmm.
clothes and shit. Yeah. No, that's one of the things. It's because that is the lesbians or slash the gay couple or non-binary couple. I have a lot of friends that I'm used to seeing. This is normal to me. And
mm-hmm.
that's why I don't care that my kid, who just turned 12 today, announced a year ago almost 2 years ago that they were gay and a year ago that they are non-binary. Like, I don't care. That's cool in this house. Like, that's normal. And I want to see more stuff like that represented in media. Because
mm-hmm.
I can't even tell you how much it melts my fucking heart when my kid is like, oh, my God, Mama, did you just see those two same-sex people kiss on the TV? That's so cool. And I'm like, yes, it is, baby. That is amazing. And that is one of the reasons you need to be really happy you're alive today and not 30 years ago.
Absolutely. Yeah.
What's funny is, like, I like how parenting today, at least for, I want to say most people, it's definitely become more open, and, like, the first time I ever noticed parenting has definitely changed since when we were kids, is I had a little niece, and she was playing pretend, and she wanted to be king. Like, that was the thing. She just wanted to be king, and I remember my father asked her, like, oh, well, why do you want to be king and not queen? And her reaction was, well, kings have all the power. I want power. And so we let her be king. And it's okay. Like, I hate when parents police small children. Because if you don't police them, they don't care.
Yeah.
At the end of the day.
Yeah.
A king isn't a guy to her. At the end of the day, king was a title, and she wanted the title that was at the top.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And that's how I feel like things should be. And the fact that king is male representative and queen is female representative. No, I actually told my mom when I was a kid, well before I came out as bi or whatever. I don't want to be the king or the queen. I want to be the emperor.
Yeah, it's a nice gender neutral term.
It is.
I mean, there's empress, but still, it's emperor.
Yeah, I told my mom that I wanted to be the emperor, but like I want to rule all of it, not just part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like we should have more instances, which we do now, of that kind of neutrality being normalized. And that's part of the reason I haven't seen a lot of queer films from the past, you know, 30 years, 35 years of my life, is because not a lot of them have been representative of what the world needs to be currently.
There's actually, I haven't seen it yet, but I know I saw the preview on Netflix. There's actually a documentary out, and I am meaning to watch it. But it's about trans representation in film and TV. And it's it's hosted by a lot of trans figures and actors and all that stuff. And in the trailer, though, someone said something that I feel like is very applicable, because they were talking about, like, how people complain. Like, other people complain that the LGBT community complains about representation in certain movies all the time. But they said, and they said something that made sense. The only reason we complain is because there's so few representation in film now that when you mess up, it's noticeable. The more representation you have, the less people will complain about it, because then it won't matter. Then you can get by with one bad representation in a sea of a larger group.
Yeah, I totally get that.
No, I get that too.
But it's like apparently, but right now, it's like every part, every role, everything matters.
But you know what? Think of it this way too. That here we are in 2021. You take a look at films in 2021 that are LGBTQ representation. I mean, you've got 40, mm-hmm. 50 of them in 1 year. Okay. When I was growing up, it was lucky if it was 6 or 7. And generally, of those 6 or 7, there were none that were positive. None. Okay. You know, to complain now, I think, is forgetting what we came from. Okay. Seriously. I think it's a little,
I think there's a little of both. I think there's a nice happy medium somewhere.
Yeah, but I still think it's being bitchy for bitchy's sake, because you're not representing what you came from and what happened before, and you're not understanding the history of it. You know, we are so lucky to have this type of representation now. Okay, and yeah, I'm the fucking old guy. And I look at now, and I'm like, if representation was like this years ago, I wouldn't have had problems coming out.
I'm about to get off the show.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So you know, that's my thought on it anyway.
Yeah.
I'm sorry that you guys heard that. I thought I was on mute. I just had a baby accident, and they slipped and busted their chin open in the shower.
Ooh.
Oh. Are you okay?
I love everyone, and I'm so, so sorry. I just mommied up the boo-boo, but Daddy is not doing a good enough job of –
Okay,
loving on
go,
them right
go.
Now.
You have work to do. Go.
Yeah, go.
Hey, go. We'll
talk to you later. I'm so sorry.
All right. Bye, everybody. That's more important. Good night. Well, Sydney, while we're here, I want to just, again, I talked to you briefly, but I want to just give you the opportunity. You've been on with us a number of times now. And we definitely want you to do your own show. So
I would absolutely love that.
So you and I need to talk offline, but we will get back together by August for sure. Okay. But one
definitely.
Of the things too is we're going to be we're working toward getting off of. Blog Talk, as you can tell, it's a little problematic. It's what it is. But I know you wanted to set up a meeting, a Zoom meeting with us, and I just wanted to let you know, you probably don't know this, but we got a comment today from Doc, from Eric, and one of his friends committed suicide.
Oh.
And so,
oh, wow.
So we may have to cancel that for a little bit.
That's fine. No, do whatever you need to do. I'm the one with the freer schedule, so I'm here whenever.
Yeah, both you and I are free. So what we'll do is we'll get in touch with each other. I'll message you, but we'll definitely do that and get that going too. But as we go along, I might as well use this time for housekeeping. And so on Thursday, we're going to have a show with Noel Vera. Noel is a television and film reviewer that is published in the Philippines. And there is a new Filipino anime series out on Netflix called Klase. And we'll be talking about that on Thursday. On Friday, Adam has a new show, and he'll be doing that with Cathode Ray Mission. On Saturday, as we mentioned earlier, Stranger Than Fiction, we'll be doing that as a watch. And next week, we have a number of things not set in stone yet, so I can't really say. But we'll be doing stuff next week also, so that'll be a lot of fun. And that's what we got so far.
Awesome.
We try to do well. So, again, thank you so much for everything. You've added so much during this Pride Week, Sydney. We can't say enough. And we really appreciate you being with us.
Thank you for having me on and continually wanting me on. So.
Yeah. Well, let me put it this way. When you're good, we're going to want you there. So that's the way I look at it.
Well, thank you.
Right. So.
I've enjoyed the process.
Our prayers with Rachel and her kids, and hopefully everything will work out. Again, thank you very, very much for listening. And we will see you on Thursday for Trussé. All right? Folks, thank you very much. You have any last words as far as the films or anything we haven't mentioned?
I think we covered most, if not all of it. I mean, I'm sure there's stuff we didn't mention, but we covered the basics.
Okay, good. All right, fair enough. Well, we're going to say good night. Thank you very much for being with us, and we'll see you next week.
Good night.
All right, say good night, Sydney.